Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
All right, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Hey, Jane Ellen, I hope you can still hear me. I hope you're still listening. Jane Ellen came down to the coast and was up in, she's up in Monroe County. She'd had some problems with the gardens up there. She heard the show. And one quick thing, folks, you know, radio is a really great medium. I've been involved in it in one way or another since I was in high school. But here's how radio has changed. Actually, you can listen to it on the airwaves, traditionally with your radio, which is a great way to do it. I like doing it that way. It's kind of the great old-fashioned way of doing it. But the good thing about radio, too, is that now we can do podcasts and we can broadcast simultaneously on the web. So if you have a computer, there are many ways of doing this. You can just go to our website, FMTalk1065.com. You got that? FMTalk1065.com. Just go to the website and you can listen to it live there with your computer. As long as you've got, a hookup for your computer to the internet. So even if you're outside the normal broadcast range, anywhere in the world, you can listen to the show. It's kind of interesting and weird. So Jane Ellen, I hope you're hearing that. So listen. I'm going to take just a minute to talk about some of the basics of garden, because Jane brought up a lot of issues. Jane Ellen brought up a lot of issues just before we went to break. And what Jane Ellen was saying was, look, my garden in Monroe County is doing just terrible. I think there's some fungus. I think my whole garden is infected. I'm just going to have to go somewhere else, and I can't. And she described a wide variety of plants that were being affected. Well, the first thing I told Jane Ellen was, no, there's no way a single fungus is attacking all those different plants. That's not where the issue is. That's not the issue. And you got a different fungus attacking each plant. In all likelihood, what she's seeing this year is the result of all of this rain. And so I wanted to emphasize that. Next year, a lot of the leaf fungus that she was seeing, she won't see at all. It has nothing to do with her soil or anything else, really, except the fact that it was raining all the time. And that allowed certain leaf and fungal diseases to occur. We kind of get used to that on the Gulf Coast because we get them all the time. Our fig leaves always drop their leaves. Our figs always drop their leaves this time of year. It's just inevitable because of the excess rainfall. It happens almost every year. It really doesn't seem to hurt the figs. It's probably good for us because it keeps the figs from growing too much. So these leaf diseases can be a problem. They're a problem on tomatoes. It can really keep tomatoes from developing. But Jane, you know, I think you had some other problems in your garden because you're having a hard time with okra. And so here's my basic recipe. And Jane Ellen, take a piece of your garden at a time, and this solves a whole lot of issues. Take a small area of your garden. Don't overdo it. If you can avoid using a tiller, don't use a tiller. Tillers can destroy soil. I'll just tell you that right away. But take a small area of your garden and make that a really good place. So as much as you can, get a garden fork, Jane. Jane Ellen, get a garden fork. Listen to me, folks. Get a garden fork. That's a four-tine little tool. And wiggle that into the soil and lean it back, and you'll crack the hard pan. You don't turn the soil. You don't need to turn it. You just need to crack that hard pan. I suspect that after many years, you're probably beginning to develop a hard pan there. That hard pan is making it difficult for roots to penetrate very deeply, and it's making it difficult for water to penetrate deeply. You have a lot of problems. It probably goes from being too wet to too dry, and cracking that can help. But here's the really important part. Here's the really important part. Once you've cracked an area, and let's start small, okay? Let's take an area 4x16 just to experiment with. 16 feet long, 4 feet wide, okay? Just crack that with your fork. It won't take you that long. Get your nephews to do it. Whatever you have to do, you know? Get them to crack that. And it's not hard. Just lean back on that fork. Crack the soil. Don't turn it, just crack it. then come back with leaves. And if you can get just bags of leaves that people throw out on the street, make a little pile of leaves about 4 to 5 feet high, okay, along that whole area. Do it this time of year. It's a perfect time of year to do it. And along that whole 4x16 area. And just let those leaves molder down, which is they're going to do. They're going to be by the time it's ready to plant for you in Monroe County next spring, those leaves are going to be about 8 inches, 12 inches high. They're going to go from 5 feet to about 12 inches high, just like that. If they're not turning fast enough, what you can do if they're not converting into soil fast enough, which they do very rapidly here, you can take a fork and just turn them just a little bit. You can add a little bit of nitrogen to them. That's a good thing. You can add kitchen scraps to them. That's even better, perhaps. You can add a little bit of manure to it. That's fine. And just, you're going to see that soil is so much better. It will grow anything. And one of the interesting things is when you add leaves to that degree, and we've got plenty of leaves, so there's never any problem finding them. And if you don't have leaves, call me. We'll talk about what other things you can do. When you do that, you begin to get rid of the nematodes because nematodes don't like that much organic matter. They have a hard time struggling because there are lots of predators that kill nematodes when you get that much organic matter. You actually create a fresh layer of organic matter that the nematodes aren't even in. So you have a new layer of topsoil. Your soil starts draining better. It starts holding on to moisture better. It holds on to nutrients better. It makes all the difference. So, Jane Allen, I hope you heard that. I hope you heard that. It's really good. Let's see. Have we got any callers there, Phil? No callers. But we're about to. Yeah, we're good. I'm listening. Who's calling, Phil? Yeah. Hey, who am I talking with?
Good morning.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can, barely. This is Tara.
Hey, Tara.
Yes, sir. My question is, it's probably strange as usual, but whether or not shrubs, particularly hollies, that I have deliberately allowed to grow very tall, because my vision is whether or not I can bend them over once we get into a more rainy season, when they'll be more flexible, and wrap tie them to the top of a chain link fence. Will that pull the, because I've noticed that, you know, of course the soil sucks everything down. If you put a container out and you leave it for a while, after a few years, it's going to be at ground level. But so as the shrubs grow, if I were to do that, will the shrubs themselves in their growth pull the chain link fence up so that it leaves a vacancy at the bottom of the fence?
This is an engineering question. It's a bioengineering question that I'm not sure I can really answer. And we would probably have to do some kind of weird mathematical calculation based on the strength of aluminum and aluminum chain compared to the strength of, I have no idea, Tara.
but
I think it's a bad idea to do that. I mean, you're going to
pulling it up versus the strength of the ground sucking it down.
Yes, I don't know that the ground has that much suck down force, but here's what I do think.
Let me just say that I have had a 5 foot fence, and when I had to have it patched, it was 4 feet.
Well, that's because there's other things going on there, but no, it didn't get sucked down into the ground so much as you may have had an accumulation of organic matter that the grass grew over, which frequently happens. So you can get a soil buildup around old structures and old fences that basically covers the bottom of the fence.
Well, this but it's not actually oak tree that had to be removed after Katrina.
Yeah. So, at any rate, I don't know.
So you don't know. Okay. Well,
Here's what I'm confident of. Fences don't get sucked into the ground very easily, unless there's a sinkhole and there's not many sinkholes we're going to be encountering in Mobile County. It's yeah, so it's not going to get sucked down into the ground, but organic matter can build up around fences. I always think if you tie a plant to a fence or to anything else, you're going to destroy the plant and the fence at the same time. So I always think that's kind of a bad idea if you're doing it on purpose, but maybe you're not suggesting you're doing it on purpose. Maybe you're suggesting that's what happened.
I'm doing it as a security device.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, I think it's probably not a good idea. Well, that's interesting.
All right,
I'm not good at mechanical engineering calculations. Yeah, but that's good. Hey, John, we're going to talk about that dogwood you sent me a picture of here in just a minute. That's what you got. And Greg, we're going to talk about this limestone thing because I've been looking at a lot of limestone here, but we don't have much of it in Mobile County. So we'll talk about that. And let's see. Well, who else have I got calls from? We're going to be back here in just a minute.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Mm-hmm. Look at here. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. We've had lots of interesting questions this morning, lots of interesting discussions about many different kinds of things. John in Irvington sent me a photo, a couple of photos, which you can do. You can just send them to me as texts, just like you're texting a photo. It's really simple. And it's a great picture, John. Really good picture. The color's nice. The detail's nice. And it's and what I can tell you, John, is it's a dogwood. It's a flowering dogwood, Cornus florida. And he says it's kind of unusual in the woods. He doesn't see anything else like it. Yeah, you know, flowering dogwoods have had a real struggle here along the Gulf Coast. And they don't live long because there's so many diseases that affect them. I think probably 100 years ago or let's say 50 to 75 years ago, we probably had more dogwoods on the Gulf Coast than we had had in 10,000 years. And they exploded. They were everywhere along the Gulf Coast for a lot of reasons. In part, mostly, perhaps, because people loved them, but in part because of fire suppression and other things. So we suddenly had this explosion of dogwoods, and then the diseases started catching up. And then we started importing diseases. And so dogwoods really have a struggle. So it'll be fun to watch this and see how resistant it is to diseases. But we've not had good luck with dogwoods. But John, that's what you got down in Irvington. It's gonna have a struggle down there. But we'll see. We'll see. It looks like it's a little bit of a thicket. It's gonna have a little bit of a problem in that thicket. But it needs. I don't know what it's going to need. It's a tough customer, these dogwoods anymore in our area, but that's what it is. Gary in Gulf Shores, I'm listening. What's up, Gary? Hey, Gary, you still there? Phil, is Gary with us?
He should be.
Okay, I don't hear him. Maybe he's not there anymore. Let's go to our next caller, okay? Who's our next caller?
Jim.
Jim, I'm listening.
Jim,
what's
in Georgetown.
Up?
Georgetown, how you doing today, Bill?
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Good. I got a couple questions for you here. We bought at the Botanical Gardens three turmeric plants, and I was reading on the internet, it says not to plant them until spring. Is that true, or can I go ahead and put them in the ground now?
Well, you know, here's what I think. I think probably you would probably do okay to put them in the ground now. Mine have survived the winters without any problems. In areas where the winters may be colder, and if you were expecting a really cold winter, maybe there could be some damage. It is probably a little safer. It is probably a little bit safer to wait, but I think they have time to get established. And so I think you're probably going to be okay planting it now.
Yeah, I figured it, they had about 3 months to the first freeze, so they'd probably get a good chance of, you know, getting the root going.
That's right. And so they'll get a little bit of root going. They actually, it won't be, those plants will go down before the first freeze. As soon as temperatures get into the 40s, the leaves begin to disappear and they will go down. But, and so probably in October, but they're probably still going to have enough time to get established. I'd go ahead and do that. Maybe, in this case, adding a mulch on top of the plant may help to keep them a little bit warmer this year. So add a mulch on top. In general, I don't recommend mulches for plants that have above ground parts because that creates problems. But when you have a plant like a ginger that disappears below ground, I think mulches probably help. So I might mulch it pretty good.
I see what I'm saying? A mulch is probably, you know, insulated a little bit against the cold.
Right. And we don't recommend that for plants like citrus or other things because you actually want the ground heat to escape and warm the top.
Right.
But in this case, I think a little bit of a mulch on top might help until next spring. But, Jim, I would go ahead and plant it. Yep, for sure. Yeah. Turmeric is great. And I have, you know, I have a little turmeric patch. It's really easy for us to grow. It's one of the... When we talk about herbs, we tend to think of Italian herbs, which is kind of crazy. But they're herbs from all over the world. And turmeric is one of those herbs that we really grow well. And so you've done a good thing there.
Good. I'm very glad to hear that. Now, the other thing was an orchid. What orchid would I buy if I wanted to harvest vanilla bean?
The vanilla bean orchid. Which is something planifolia, whose Latin name I forgot, but you wouldn't care. It's the vanilla bean orchid, and it's an orchid that grows, that's native to, for example, Mexico and parts of the Caribbean. Jim, oh boy, is that a challenge. You got to have a greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You got to keep the temperature just right. And you've got to have a tolerance for an orchid that's going to grow all over creation. I mean, it is a big orchid, and so it takes a lot of space and a lot of sunlight and a very warm greenhouse in winter to get this thing to fruit. But it's worth the try. But it's the vanilla orchid, the vanilla bean orchid, and I'm ashamed to say that I have forgotten the Latin name. It's not coming to my head right now. It's in a different file drawer, but it's easy enough to find. You just got to have a really good greenhouse to do it.
I need a little bit bigger one than the little bitty one I knocked the little outdoor plants in the wintertime.
Yeah, maybe. And you also have to keep it very warm, so it's not going to tolerate temperatures down below. It's not just that it won't tolerate freezing temperatures; it won't even tolerate temperatures much below 45. So you're going to have to keep the temperature above 45, which is hard to do. I mean, you got to have a really good greenhouse to do that. And I'm not ultimately discouraging you, but it's a tough one. You know, if I were going to grow orchids like that, this is fun. Can I talk about this for just a second?
Sure.
Because I love growing orchids. And to me, the ideal situation for growing orchids would be to have a porch, for example, that was facing south or east. And that was getting a good bit of sunlight during the winter, and I would cover that porch with just plastic, just like it was a nursery grower's greenhouse. The sunlight angle's pretty low in winter, so it would come through on that porch, and it would probably get enough sunlight, and I could use the heat from the house. So that I wouldn't have to I'd probably need a supplemental heater, but the heat from the house would help to keep that greenhouse warm. If you have a freestanding greenhouse, boy, it is the devil to heat. But if you had a south-facing or east-facing porch that you could cover in plastic, have a little bit of supplemental heat that was safe, it would be expensive, but probably electrical heat may be the best. And electrical heat that heats water may be best, a radiant heater. And to do something like that would be really good. You have to keep the humidity high, which is one of the problems, but that's the way I would do it if I were going to be growing orchids again.
Now, and then I have a porch that faces south and west, and it would get sun basically from around 11 o'clock throughout the rest of the day.
Yep.
And it's right up against the house, and I'm thinking about putting windows in there and actually taking the green out. And it would have a big chest freezer in it, which would probably keep the whole thing.
That could help. You're right. You're absolutely right. But you'll still need to keep the temperature up above about 45 for the vanilla bean orchid, and whose name is just right there on the tip of my tongue. Planifolia is the species. But at any rate, the west facing part is a little concerning. It doesn't eliminate the possibility. But, you know, your cold winds are going to be coming from the west, from the northwest in winter. That's why I say south and east is better. But, you know, it could work really well. Just make sure that you buffer those winds on that northwest side as well as you can, because that's really going to want to cool that porch down. But with that south-facing exposure, and if it's sealed up reasonably well, and you can deal with the humidity that's going to be generated, and you can deal with the fact that if the windows stay closed all the time, it's going to overheat. So you want to be able to open those windows. But that could be the thing to do. And I like the ice chest as a source of sort of basic heat. And then you can add supplemental heat when you need to.
Sounds great. That's what I needed to know, Bill. I appreciate it.
All right, Jim. Hey, this is a great experiment, so tell me how it goes, okay?
I sure will.
Yeah. Hey, have we got time to talk to Gary there for a second? I know we're coming close on break. Phil, can you stretch this break just a little bit? Let me talk to Gary, because he keeps trying really hard. Hey, Gary, can I talk? Can we talk about sweet potatoes for a second?
Dig.
So say it again, Gary.
How do I know when sweet potatoes are ready to be dug up?
You know, there's one really good way to know when sweet potatoes are ready to be dug up, and that's to dig them up. So it's kind of like potatoes. You know, you do it around the edges, and you see if they're the right size. One of the interesting things, and this is a great question, Gary, and here's why. Because we have a very long season. And a lot of times, and I'll tell you, this is how dumb I am. I started my sweet potatoes early, and then I just let them grow and grow and grow, and I said, I'm going to dig them up. And so then when it comes time to dig them up, they're these gigantic sweet potatoes, and they're almost too big to use practically, and they're not. So actually, I like actually digging them up a little bit earlier. And, you know, here's the other good thing about sweet potatoes. You can dig up a little piece at a time. So I would say, when did you plant those sweet potatoes?
I didn't plant them super early, and I got some in containers and some in the garden.
Yeah, so when did you plant the ones in the garden?
Probably about June.
Yeah, so I suspect some of them are going to be ready to dig up now. And early June is probably as good a time as any. Late May, early June, fine time to plant sweet potatoes. You can probably dig some of them up now, and they'll probably be a mix of sizes. Some of them will be small. Don't dig up the whole patch. Just dig around the edge and kind of see if you've got some that suits you. If you don't, use the ones that are there. If they're not large enough for you, save the rest of them. Let them grow a little more. In 2 or 3 weeks, come back and dig those others. So you don't have to dig them all at once. Kind of dig around the edges. It's funny how sweet potatoes grow. You'll get some sweet potatoes that are well away from where the crown is, and some that are close by. But just dig around and kind of get a feel for it, and that's the best way of knowing. And you know, some varieties take longer to develop. It just depends on variety. But really, the practical way of doing it is dig, and see if they're the right size yet.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you much.
You're welcome. Hey, Phil, we better go to that ad now. There we go. Ooh, and we get to listen to Bamboula. Can I talk about Bamboula when we come back? Thank you.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of interesting questions, lots of interesting discussion this morning. Hey, Jim in Georgetown had some questions about his turmeric. It gets full sun in the a.m., then dapple sunlight the rest of the day. Jim, that's perfect. You know, one of the things I like about turmeric and some of the other gingers is that I can grow them well in places that are a little shadier than some herbs like. So They're herbs that actually do reasonably well in shady places. Every plant likes sunlight, but turmeric and other gingers have these big, big leaves so that they can absorb enough sunlight when they're on the bottom of a forest floor. They love the sunlight, but they have big leaves. So sometimes they can get a little bit overwhelmed by too much sunlight, particularly at midday and afternoon. They love it in the morning. Jim, you got a perfect place for that turmeric. It's going to be great. And that's one of the great things about plants like turmeric. We got a lot of callers. I better catch up with who's first here? Is it Howard? I'm listening. What's up?
Yes, this is Howard. I live down in the Theodore area, and I've been listening to
yes,
your
keys
on the radio about how to get rid of the crackweed. I'm calling to find out how to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. So gripeweed is this, we talk about it a lot. It's gonna be something we talk about a lot this time of year. And it is one of the interesting problems is that people really notice it this time of year, even though it comes in much earlier. It starts developing really around, I'd say 1st of May, when the rains, but it's got to have rain. Gripeweed loves rain, loves high moisture conditions, and then it really begins to develop over summer, and then this time of year it just drives people crazy because it's
right.
It's had a whole summer to develop and everything's right, and so then they go out and they try to kill it this time of year with a herbicide. Well, there's a couple of problems, and let me just tell you why it's a bad idea to use a herbicide on gripeweed this time of year. It's already set its seeds. It's already got gajillions of seeds on those leaves. The seeds actually hang. That's right. Those are the seed balls. So let's say here's imagine what happens. So you get out. This is an annual weed. It's going to die out anyway. It's not perennial. It's not going to survive. The only thing that's going to survive are those seeds. And so you go out and you find a herbicide and you say, ooh, I'm going to kill all these plants. And maybe you don't kill your grass in the process. Maybe you just manage to do it so that you only kill the gripeweed. Well, what's happened? All those seeds are going to come back. You know, the plant was going to die anyway. So you didn't do anything. So that's one of the problems is that it's better at this time of year if it's to pull it where you can, because you got to get rid of those seeds. Now, let's talk a little bit about why gripeweed thrives. It really, those seeds will not germinate. They will not germinate unless they have plenty of sunlight. That's right. The weed's seeds do not germinate unless they have exposure to sunlight. So any place the sun can see the ground, if you see what I'm saying, any
right.
place that sunlight can penetrate to the ground, gripeweed is going to germinate. So the places where I have a problem with gripeweed in my lawn are the places where I had a bare spot. And I may have had a bare spot for a lot of reasons. I have a bare spot because my good friend Chris, who is great with trees, we had to drop a limb from a tree somewhere, and it dropped in this little piece of ground. It got compacted. I knew I should have gone back and broken that soil up because I knew I'd just bang the soil up, and the grass wouldn't grow there anymore, and the gripeweed just took off. And so what you've got to do is you got to go back and say, why do I have bare spots in my yard? That's the first thing, because that's where the gripeweed's going to come in. The second thing is to mow your grass as high as possible. If you've got St. Augustine and you mow your grass at 4 inches high, you're not going to have a lot of problem with gripeweed as long as that St. Augustine's healthy, because that those big, tall blades shade the ground so that gripeweed seed can't germinate and can't come up through it. So that's a great way to deal with it. If
okay.
if you don't If you don't solve those two problems, it doesn't matter what else you do. That's just basically it. If you have bare spots because the grass can't grow well because the soil's compacted or it's too wet or whatever else, you're going to have gripe weed. It doesn't matter what else you do. You're going to have gripe weed or you're going to have another weed. If you don't mow your grass high enough, or if you have centipede, which you can't mow very high at any rate, you're probably going to have some gripe weed. You can use a pre-emergent. You got to use the right kind of pre-emergent, depending on what kind of grass you have. And you can use it in May, and it may keep some of that gripe weed seed from germinating, but you have to be very careful even with pre-emergence. So actually, probably April would be a good time to use the pre-emergent. But I actually don't recommend that because the problem isn't so much that the weed seeds are there, but that the conditions are right for those weed seeds to germinate. So if you can get the grass growing, you've eliminated the gripe weed problem. And does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I got a house that we've been just ran the renters out to get it ready for sale, and I went in the backyard. Almost the whole backyard is right.
Yeah, and so it's a tough call. So you can go, I can tell you 15 gajillion ways to kill it, but then what you're going to have is bare soil. And
well,
you're going to have
bare soil.
So your options are it's tough at this point. I mean, it's tough at this point. You could resod the backyard, for example. Because it sounds like you've lost most of the grass. You got to figure out why you lost the grass. I don't know why. Is there a lot of shade back there?
Well, it's just because it hadn't been taken care of.
Yeah, but how much sun is back there?
Pretty fair amount.
Yeah, okay. So it may not be a shade.
There, we didn't have this problem.
Yeah. So they may have been mowing the...
I don't know. It's just taking over the backyard. Yeah.
Right. If renters are out there, and you know, I sort of call it the 15-year-old lawnmower's dilemma. I knew that if I mowed the yard really short, it wouldn't grow back very fast because if you mow it really short, you virtually kill the grass, so it doesn't have any strength to grow back. So
well,
what happens is,
I just
and so they probably did occasionally, and when they did, they just whacked it. And what that meant was is it killed the grass back, and so this came on. So now you got a problem. There's really no quick fix other than to resod, and that in itself is not by any means a quick fix. Because if you kill it, what else is going to be there? I mean, there's no grass there, so you're going to have bare soil. So here's what I would do. Here's what I think I would do.
Okay.
You want it to look good. Take a small area that where it's really important. Don't try to deal with the whole yard. Just take a small area where it's really important and resod that area. Okay. And by putting the sod down, you'll actually keep those weed seeds from germinating because the seeds are going to be buried under the sod. If you decide to do that, call me back. And next week, and let's talk about how to prepare the area. Don't try to do the whole yard. Just make it look good, right? Make it look good in the area right there. And then if you want to come back and do the rest of it later, do it. But fall is a great time. Mid-October, late October is a great time to resod your yard. You'll have to water it a little bit to get it started. But it really is a good time to resod. And just do the area right around the patio or maybe right in the area where you really want it to look spiffy. And there you will have something green, and it will actually bury. You can scalp it to get the gripe weed down, or you can use Roundup on the gripe weed. Whatever you want to do, at this point, come back, break the ground up and put the sod on top of it. That's going to bury those weed seeds and keep them from germinating. So you'll have that taken care of in that area. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, when you say break the ground up, you aren't talking about getting a tiller after anything like that. You kind of break it up a little bit so you can get a hole. Is that right?
That's right. And I don't recommend using tillers for a lot of reasons, but this may scare you just a little bit, but it's not nearly as hard as you think. Get a garden fork like we talked about earlier, four-time
garden
fork.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking about.
Yep, and just crack it. Don't turn it, just crack it. And that way you're going to crack. Probably they had, if your renters had dogs or if they were out there partying on the ground a lot, that soil could get really compacted. Just cracking it will break up that hard pan, makes a ton of difference. The other thing I recommend doing after you've cracked it, if you can get some pine bark, just pine bark mulch, pure pine bark mulch, each piece no bigger than your fingernail, and lay it on about 2 inches thick before you put the sod on, man, that sod is going to love it. It's going to grow really, really well. So,
good.
So those are the two things you can do. And listen, so go out there, look around. I'd probably recommend St. Augustine. It's just the easiest thing to do. Go ahead with some St. Augustine and get it all lined up, and then call me back next week and let's talk about the details so that everything is just right.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Good, good.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
No. Yep.
Me and my best friend Lillian in her blue tick out dog Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played, waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to red dirt girls in a red dirt town, me and Lillian.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, listen, guys, we got to get on this because we don't have much time. I got a lot of questions to answer. David H. sent me a picture of some beautiful caterpillars. Beautiful caterpillars on his passion vine. And those are indeed, David, the Gulf fritillary caterpillars. They're very distinctive. It makes the Gulf fritillary butterfly. They're very beautiful. They'll do a number on those passion fruit. You should tolerate a few. Be careful because they can really, they love passion flowers. They love passion. They love the leaves, and they make beautiful butterflies. So you might have to compromise there between, and I would recommend a compromise between beautiful butterflies and beautiful fruits on your passion flower. Raymond, listen, Raymond, Raymond was listening carefully, and he heard me say that you don't want to mulch around citrus in winter, and that's true. And you definitely want to pull that mulch back in winter. And I don't know how much time I'm going to have to talk about it today, but Raymond, call me back next week, and when you do, send me a picture of the mulch you have around your citrus, and let's talk about mulch next week on citrus and what it means and what it's good for, how that mulch should be applied, and why you don't want mulch on citrus in winter. Raymond, you hear me? Call me back, okay, and next week, and let's talk about it, or text me back. Send me a picture of your mulch on the citrus so we can talk about it. And we got one more caller. Jim, is that you?
Yes, sir.
You still there? Yeah, we got a little bit of time. Let's talk about these maples. Tell me about it.
What I got is I had to do some work out of town up in Dadeville, Alabama, and they have a Japanese red maple nursery up there. And I was able to buy one and transport it down here. And I planted it, and it's a beautiful tree, but the situation is about 4 or 5 inches out of the ground, it splits off. One side is green and one side is red. And I guess my question is, if I was to prune the green side off, would it kill the tree?
All right, yes. So what you have is the rootstock is emerging. You'll notice that the green one is emerging below a little knot, and the red one is emerging above that knot, right? You can send me a picture just to make sure next week. But the lower one is the rootstock. It was grafted. It's a grafted maple. And the lower one is the rootstock. If you cut it all the way back too fast, you could cause injury to the plant. What I recommend when you have rootstock emerging like that is to cut it back by half. Okay? And then cut it back by half again next spring. And then in the summer, cut it back by half again. And that way the plant will have time to grow, and keep cutting it back by half for through next fall, okay? About five times. And that way,
I'm not convinced it's starting to grow on me. You know, it's two different colors, and you know, it's kind of neat. But I want.
Well, the green stem
to really go. You know,
and the green stem will take over very quickly. So send me a picture if you have any doubts about this. We'll talk about it more next week and about precisely how to do it. Why don't you send me a picture of the two plants, of the two tops, and then send me a picture of right where they're emerging. And I'm pretty sure we got a graft, and I'm pretty sure my advice to cut it back by half is the thing to do. But send me a picture next week, and we'll make sure that that's the thing to do.
Okay, one more question, Bill. I know you got to go. When is the best time to prune azaleas, just to kind of shape them up a little bit?
The simplest time where there's no ill effects is going to be about a month after they bloom. They bloom is the perfect time. This time of year, if you prune them too heavily this time of year, you're not going to have any flowers because the flower buds have already formed. Now, listen carefully. If you just remove the long whips that are taller, much taller than everything else, you got no problem.
Okay.
So
that's what I'm after. I want to get rid of
right. Just go back under the crown, under the general crown of the plant, the dome of the plant, and cut those long whips back underneath the crown of the plant. You won't lose significant number of flowers, and you'll shape it up. But do not use shears. Just use hand clippers to prune those long whips back. It's fine to do that this time of year.
Okay, I appreciate it, Bill. Thanks for everything, and I'll try to get back with you next week and give you a picture of that maple.
All right, good.
Right, thank you.
And yeah. Hey, Kevin, we should talk about iron plants, and I would love to. Can you call me back next week? Because I'm afraid I'm going to run out of time. Meanwhile, I need to say real quickly, Dan and his nasturtiums. Dan, you should kick me, Dan, because you keep asking me the questions about your nasturtiums, and this is the third week, and I need to get to you and talk about this. Listen, nasturtiums, if you're planting them out in the yard, let me just say a couple of things about nasturtiums. They prefer cooler weather, and so it's a little easier to get them started in pots, in containers, and to grow them out in containers. But they'll do fine in the yard. They'll need a little bit of shade. And the other thing about nasturtiums is they hate wet soil. They hate wet soil. And Dan, I'm a little worried, and I don't have you here to talk to you, so you can call me next week about this. I'm a little worried that your soil may be a little bit wet, and they're struggling with that. Now, they need moisture, there's no question. But if the soil stays wet too long, they can get lots of root rot diseases. And so let's talk a little bit about that, how to grow those nasturtiums in a way that you don't have that many problems with them. Is that okay? So there it is. I love nasturtiums this time of year. I'm starting mine in pots. You know, I've got a bunch of seeds left over. I'm actually thinking I'm going to go out and plant some in the yard on the south side of my house so they get a little bit of protection. And so I'll get those later into the winter. And the nasturtiums I have in containers, you know what I can do? I can bring them up onto the porch when it gets cold. And that means I have them all winter long, and I might have to throw something on them. They don't like temperatures below about 30 degrees, but bring them up on the porch, keep them a little bit warm. I'll have them all winter long. They'll be blooming all winter long. I'll have them next spring. That's very, very nice. Very, very nice as well. And so that's one of the ways to do it. Hey, we've had lots of conversations today. I want you to remember how our conversation started with my old friend, the Timber Rattler, who just sat there while we all stepped over him, stepped around him. The dogs ran over him, and he's just there making a living. He didn't want to. The last thing he wanted to do was put his mouth on one of these nasty humans. He's just making a living. That's the way the world is. We're just full of people trying to make a living. We all got to kind of compromise with each other and figure out how to work around each other. That's what gardening is about, ain't it? Hey, call us back next week. We'll have plenty of time. Beautiful song here. Listen to it careful.
Brave men fall with the battle cry and tears. tears fill the eyes of their loved ones and their brothers in arms. So it went for Joseph Warren. And it should have been different, it could have been easy. His reign could have saved him, but a country unborn needs bravery. And it spread like wildfire. Wildfire. From the ashes grew sweet liberty, like the seeds of the pines when the forest burns. They open up to grow and burn again. Should have been different, it could have been easy, but too much money rolled in to ever end slavery. The cry for war spread like wildfire. Wildfire.